October 18th. Cozy Corner Gail came into Thimble Pleasures today, and for the second time in recent memory, I was happy that Emily was there. The first time, of course, was when Tom Grangerfield showed up on the shop's opening day and I needed someone to exchange meaningful glances with. Today was a little bit different. I was checking my phone to see if it was too early to grab lunch downstairs. Have I mentioned that I've lost 3 pounds since Thimble Pleasures opened? Sheila hardly ever has time to meet up at Linway's these days, and I do so hate eating pastry by myself. I'd just noted that it was 11:07, so a smidge on the early side for lunch, but not egregiously so, when I felt a shift in the atmosphere, as though a dark force had entered the room. I looked up, and there was Gail studying the Aurifil thread display.
"I should have known she'd carry Aurifil," Gail muttered under her breath. "Too good for Guterman, I suppose."
Emily was sitting behind the counter, making notes on a computer spreadsheet. "You'll find the Guterman at the other end of the store," she called, without looking up. "We've found that it's best to keep them separated. People have very strong opinions when it comes to thread."
"Well, isn't that precious?" Gail said with a snort.
I think you mean special," Emily murmured, sounding as though she were only half paying attention. Gail huffed, and then she puffed.
"I know what I mean."
"And what you mean is special." Emily finally took her eyes off of the computer screen. "Like Dana Carvey's old church lady skit?" She squinched up her face in imitation. "Isn't that special?"
"I'm sorry, but is this what you call customer service around here?"
Emily shrugged. "I don't know. I guess it depends on whether or not you're a customer." I'd been sitting out of sight this whole time, and I was seriously considering hiding underneath the table until Gail left. Unfortunately, she took a few steps to the right of the Aurifil display and saw me.
"I should have known you'd be here," she snarled, "tied to Sheila's apron strings as always."
"I work here," I told her, "at least informally." Gail nodded.
"You say tomato, I say tomato."
"You do know that Marnie is one of Thimble Pleasure's main investors, right?" Emily asked. "She's integral to the store and its success."
"All you're telling me is that instead of getting paid to work here, Marnie pays to work here."
Gail gave a wave of her hand as though she were done discussing it, which I, for one, was grateful. Not that I thought there was any validity to what she was saying. I just knew that if she kept saying mean things to me, eventually my feelings would get hurt, which wasn't exactly my idea of a good time. Gail continued her perusal of the shop. I wondered if we had grounds to call 911.
"Yes, send the police on the double. Someone very rude has come into the store."
Finally, Sheila came out of her office.
"Emily, do you know if the Moda order has shipped yet?"
"Let me look." Emily went back to the computer. That's when I realized I was grateful that she was there. For one thing, if she hadn't been, I'd be a little pile of smoking ashes on the floor at this point. But I also appreciated how cool she'd been under Gail's fire. She hadn't flinched, hadn't uttered a rude word or made a snarky remark. She'd been calm, cool, and collected the whole time.
"Gail, how lovely to see you,"
Sheila called when she saw her former friend and current foe sniffing around the pre-cuts.
"I've been hoping you'd stop by. I've been thinking we ought to do something fun together. I mean, our shops. Maybe a mini shop hop?
Cindy Wasserman over at Pieces and Bits in Worcester says she'd be interested, and I know you're friends with Bettina at Quilting Corner in Hayesville. She also likes the shop hop idea.
I stood in awe of my oldest and dearest friend. She knew that Gail was gunning for her, or at least gunning for Thimble Pleasures, and still, Sheila was as cool as a cucumber and pleasant as could be. Like daughter, like mother, I guess. I could see that it caught Gail off guard.
Well, I don't know. We're still working on our holiday calendar and, well...
I know just what you mean, Sheila exclaimed, as though Gail had completed a coherent thought. Cindy had the idea for a Small Business Saturday treasure hunt in November. Everybody will need a treat after slaving over a hot stove on Thanksgiving, don't you think?
I know I sure will. Sheila has been ordering a complete cooked Thanksgiving dinner from Kroger since 1987, but I wasn't about to contradict her.
I'd need to talk to Melissa about it, Gail said. She may have something else planned.
Of course, of course.
Sheila had been standing a few feet from Gail this whole time, and now she was ushering the woman out of the store.
Talk it over with Melissa. Tell her that everyone would be so disappointed if the cozy quilter wasn't involved. It just wouldn't be the same without you.
With that, Gail was out the door. Sheila stood at the shop entrance and continued to wave, calling out,
"Text me as soon as you know something. So good to see you. Such an honor."
As soon as Gail was out of sight, Sheila turned to me and Emily and wiped the imaginary sweat from her brow.
"Bar the door, girls. That was a close one."
"What are you trying to do, Mom?" Emily asked. "Kill her with kindness?" Sheila shrugged.
"I'm just trying to make it seem like we're all on the same team, which, in a way, we are. The Cozy Quilter and Thimble Pleasures are such different shops, more like cousins than siblings. We complement each other. Let's face it, if you want Civil War repro fabrics, your best bet is to head to Ashland and the Cozy Quilter.
But if it's Ruby Star Society you've got a hankering for, well, come on down to Thimble Pleasures." Emily tapped on the computer keyboard. "It says here you just ordered a huge shipment of repro from Marcus Fabrics, Mom. Which is to say, I'm not buying what you're selling."
"But you are selling what I'm buying," Sheila quipped. "We need a cute idea to introduce our Civil War fabrics to our customer base. Come up with something, would you, honey?"
Anyone could see what a great team Sheila and Emily made. And I had to admit that Emily was doing a fantastic job.
"So, admit it,"
I told myself as I watched the two of them go over the Marcus order. "People change. They grow up. They mature. They develop discipline."
"Yo, babe, you ready to take off?"
A tall, bearded, and heavily tattooed man stood at the shop entrance, two motorcycle helmets in his hand.
"We need to hit the road if we're gonna be in Chicago by showtime."
"Hold on a sec," Emily told the tall, beleathered stranger. "I need to finish up one thing." Sheila looked confused.
"I thought we were going to work on the taxes this afternoon."
"Yeah, but then Jackson texted me this morning and said he had tickets to see Maiden King at Shuba's Tavern," Emily said, still tapping away on the keyboard. "I can't miss that, but I'll be back Friday morning and we can work on taxes then."
"You're riding a motorcycle to Chicago?"
Sheila asked, her voice rising half an octave.
"In October?"
"That's pretty warm for October, Mrs. Jernigan," motorcycle man said. "Plus, I got leathers for Emily in the underseat storage."
A few minutes later, Emily had wrapped things up and was gone. Sheila was upset, even though she wouldn't admit it.
It's fine, she told me. Emily has been working very hard for 2 months now. She needs a break.
Hard to argue with that, but most people give you advance notice before they take off work. So, was Emily backsliding? Or were there just a few rough edges that still needed to be sanded down? It was almost as though Sheila could read my mind.
She's really changed, Marnie. You've seen it.
I nodded. I have, and you're right. She probably does need a break. She definitely deserves a break. But maybe when she gets back, you could implement some employee policies about requesting vacation time, especially now that you're planning on hiring 2 more employees. You could ask Emily to help you draft the policy. That was the old third-grade teacher in me peeking through. The best way to get kids to follow the rules, I learned over the years, was to give them some agency in making the rules. Sheila smacked herself on the side of her head.
Oh, I meant to tell you. Carol Woolsey applied for a position. We're going to interview her on Monday. I assume you'll want to be here for that.
Is she even qualified?
She is, Sheila replied with a nearly unbecoming enthusiasm. You should take a look at her resume, Marn. She's really very accomplished. I think she'll bring a little style to the shop, sartorially speaking.
I looked down at my outfit, a red and white Milton Falls Magpies hoodie, the Magpies being our single-A baseball team, of course, and a pair of jeans that I purchased at the Gap circa 1992.
Really?
I'm not stylish enough for you? Sheila laughed.
I think you make our customers feel right at home, Marn. Carol would be a more aspirational figure, style-wise.
Diary, as you might imagine, I have mixed feelings about Carol working at Thimble Pleasures, although I know it would be great for the store, given how many quilting communities she's a part of. She might even get the art quilters to stop by. The Milton Falls art quilters are, by and large, a standoffish bunch, always running over to Nancy Crow's barn in Baltimore, Ohio, not Maryland, for workshops and fabric dyeing sessions. But I'm fairly sure Carol is friends with Haley Wilde, Milton Falls' most famous textile artist. What if Carol could get Haley to teach a class at Thimble Pleasures? That would be a serious coup. What time is the interview on Monday? I asked.
Carol's coming in at 8:45, Sheila informed me, so we'll have plenty of time to chat before the shop opens.
So, I have until 8:45 on Monday to pull a look together. Wish me luck. I'm going to need it. October 21st. Dear Diary, I have survived a morning being dressed by Abby. Well, that sounds strange. Abby didn't literally dress me, but she did hand me clothes while I stood shivering in the dressing room at Green Threads, the boutique she works at. Clothes, I might add, that I would never be able to afford without Abby's 40% employee discount. It was Jessica's idea. As soon as I mentioned I was trying to up my fashion game, she suggested getting Abby's help. There was something about the way she said it, a kind of longing in her voice, as though all she's ever wanted was for me and Abby to be a team. Hashtag Team Grandma. It was clear I had no choice. Abby was going to be my own personal Silver Fox advisor. Abby was thrilled. When Jessica texted her about helping me, her reply was immediate. She says she's been wanting to get her hands on you for ages, Jessica reported. I think she means that in a nice way. I bet. So I went over to Green Threads at 10 o'clock this morning after eating breakfast at Linway's with Daryl. I had a spinach and mushroom omelet and a protein shake, i.e. the breakfast of champions, or of women who are about to spend two torturous hours doing what they hate most, clothes shopping. Why do I hate clothes shopping so much? Maybe because I'm 5'3", 154 pounds, high-waisted, and broad-shouldered. Do you know who makes clothes for women with my build? No one. Absolutely no one. Zero designers. So, over the years, I've pulled together a look I can live with. Nice jeans or khakis, L.L. Bean long-sleeved solid or striped tees, and Dansko clogs. When the weather cools down, I add a cardigan. When it warms up, I take off the cardigan and trade out the long-sleeved tees for three-quarter sleeve tees. It's what you might call the invisible middle-aged woman look. You see it everywhere, which is to say you don't see it at all. And that's fine with me. You know when I got tired of men checking me out? I think I was 17. Which means I am the polar opposite of Abby. Abby already had three outfits pulled when I walked through the door. "When I look at you, I think casually chic," she told me as she walked me to the dressing room, "which is different from casually elegant. You'd need to be taller than you are by several inches to pull off casually elegant." "Well, what exactly does casually chic mean?" I asked, as Abby opened the door to a comfortable pink-lit room, replete with a pink chaise lounge and a bottle of sparkling water. "Hmm," she said, and I wondered if she actually knew. "Jeans and a blazer. More 100% cotton, less raw silk. Chunky jewelry, not pearls. Short, not tall." "Fat, not thin?" I added. "Oh, Marnie, you're not fat," Abby lied through her teeth. "You have an adorable figure." I allowed myself to believe her assessment for a brief but lovely moment. Maybe Abby isn't so bad after all, I thought. At the very least, she was an excellent saleswoman. And you know what I realized after spending 2 hours and a whole lot of money on two outfits I really have nowhere to wear on a regular basis? Abby's really good at what she does. Not just selling, although she's very good at that too, but also putting a look together. Pairing pieces I never would have imagined worked, but absolutely did. Mixing interesting colors and textures, creating focal points. It occurred to me that Abby would make an awfully good quilter. Please don't tell her I said that. November 1st. Daryl and I went trick-or-treating with the twins last night. Alyssa had an upset tummy, so she stayed home with Jessica. The boys made adorable T-Rexes, and Jess actually let them eat a Starburst apiece when they got home. Daryl and I had a great time, but we were both really zonked by the time we got home at 8:30 and went straight to bed. I'm still feeling tired as I write this. I'm also coughing. I bet I picked up a cold while we were out and about amongst all those kids. I think I'm going to take a nap. November 5th. Third COVID test came back positive. Me and Daryl both. Feel terrible. Not sure we'll survive. November 11th. Have survived, but barely. Still exhausted. Daryl, too. We got vaccinated in September. Why do we feel so bad? November 16th. Feeling better. Have lost 6 pounds. On the whole, I prefer Weight Watchers as a weight loss strategy, but I'm not complaining. November 20th. The good news. We're almost back to normal.
Friends and family kept dropping food at the doorstep, lasagnas, casseroles, meatloaves. Sheila regularly delivered pastries from Linway's and barbecue from Barb's. We felt really taken care of by our people. Unfortunately, I've regained all 6 pounds and can feel another pound coming on as I write. Life is not fair. Still, it's good to feel good again. Ah, I hear the doorbell. Might be Sheila bringing over Krispy Kremes. Must run. Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.